Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerdy stuff way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin Schiller. Griffin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's you and I were just talking about this, but it's nice to get back to some sense of normalcy in terms of content creation, in terms of the new year and all that good stuff. It's like, I was just telling you, I felt like I've been on like vacation for a month and I'm sort of just like, okay, I kind of want to get back into things, you know, right now. Like, and this podcast is like a staple of the week. And so it's nice to be here is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Like for me, I feel like I just did this 30-day sprint. As soon as the Investor Day stuff dropped for Disney, I started this kind of like 5-week, 6-week sprint of just cranking out content and lists and staying up till 2 a.m. trying to get everything finished in time. And even last week, I actually kind of took the week off from my main channel, but I still put out like 5-6 videos on the channel while taking the week off. And so I just feel like this is like a return to kind of normal. And beyond that, my kids went back to school a couple weeks back after 10 months off. But we homeschooled in the fall, like actual legit homeschooled them, which was that was a choice. It was not a good choice, right. But it was a choice.
It's another added burden, though, for sure. And so now if you not having to do that, it makes things a little bit less stressful.
And just the simple reality that my work day, my kids aren't here.
Yeah.
Love my kids. But like for 10 months, everyone in our household was in the same room all day long because I didn't want to leave my wife to have to try and work while watching the kids. So then I was trying to work, edit videos in the same room as them. So just having a little bit of breathing room has been nice. And for one final nice thing that happened in our little break. It snowed in Texas last week.
Yes, that's right. I saw.
Not just a little snow. Not like, oh, that was cute. I mean, we got 7 hours of snow here in Austin. Apparently, it was the biggest snow Austin has received in since the 40s is what they said, which is just crazy. And so it like we woke up and there was like a pile of snow and we did a snowball fight. We're like, I guess this will go away soon enough. And then it kept snowing. Yeah, all man. Day long, and it's stuck around for days. So it's pretty cool. It's the most snow I've ever seen in my life, and I'm pretty well extreme in age. And so then, of course, it was also the most snow my kids have ever seen.
Right.
So
right.
Let me pull up this picture real quick. How has your month been?
It's been good. I've been working on a few things, a few scripts for some more like video essays and stuff like that. I've been very lucky to have some opportunities to cover WandaVision the way I have, was quoted in a couple of TV spots.
Oh, we will talk about that in just a moment.
So that was really, really cool. Actually my girlfriend and I went to Big Bear up in California. There was this cabin in the mountains. We went there. So it was pretty isolated, went tubing, hiking, all that stuff. So it was like really tubing? Nice, really relaxes.
Tubing?
Yeah. Tubing, dude.
We're in Texas having a blizzard and you're going tubing.
Yeah. Well, you could have gone tubing.
That's true.
In your backyard, you know?
Oh, I filmed, I haven't put the video out yet, but we went out and tried to do some sledding, like literally in a drainage ditch.
Yeah.
And so it's like garbage at the bottom of the hill, but it's like the biggest hill we could find in the area. And so then we slid down with cardboard boxes and stuff and they didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know what I was doing, but it was like fun for 2 seconds. And then you're like, all right, get my arms out of the garbage.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, absolutely. No, for sure. But I love, like, you know, when I was like growing up and because we used to get a lot of snow in Maryland where I was originally from, and we had like two of the largest blizzards on record in the state when I was growing up as a kid. And so like there'd be just these like dune hills of like snow in like the middle of the road and you'd be like snowing down them and it was just, I don't know, or sledding down them and whatnot. And it's like that's fun. Whenever it just kind of like happens unexpectedly, not when you're taking a trip, that's when it's like, oh, this is awesome. I feel like a kid again.
Yeah. So I was born in California and then moved to Texas when I was 7. And so I've been in 2 places that it doesn't snow. And so, you know, Texas will get like once a year, we normally get some flurries and enough accumulation to throw 2 snowballs and then it melts. But this was the real deal. And so in my life, both my parents are from Denver. So I've been to Denver during the holidays and seen snow and went skiing one time in my life. Nice. So like actually real snow and stuff to me is like, I mean, everyone in Texas everyone in Austin was posting every picture. They made a snowman. I mean, it was the whole deal. Everyone was freaking out. And everyone above the Mason-Dixon line was like, what are you doing? Like, I know.
I know. I know. But listen, that's like really cool for you guys though, because it just, it doesn't happen all the, ever. And so like the fact that it did happen, I think is just like part of the fun.
Yeah,
and
everyone just, exactly.
Just sharing that. Yeah.
And everyone, you know, Texas is not known for getting rain. We get rain. We're not getting snow. So even, you know, people could kind of appreciate a lot of that. So yeah. We had a super chat come in from Daniel Skinner. Hey, Daniel. And I have received your fan mail that you sent me, Daniel. And I'll be opening it very shortly. He said, you can go tubing in Big Bear, California. I know because I've been doing it since I was 10 years old. I, however, did not know that because I have not been there.
They got some cool little hills that you can go down for sure for tubing and stuff like that. Also, really just good skiing and snowboarding if you do that sort of thing. So.
One quick question in here. It was asked, does Griffin live in L.A.? I don't know if I'm saying anything interesting, but yeah, I mean, I went out to go visit him out there. And if you saw pictures and stuff like that, it was pretty cool. Spent a whole week in L.A. with Griffin doing stuff and our buddy Tyler, and had a bunch of adventures. Our buddy Durbin was able to get us some of us passes to go. I guess you weren't able to join us for that one. I'm sorry about that. We should have taken you.
Oh, that's OK. I had a season pass anyways. So
it's just making sure. I was like, wait a second. We excluded you from going to Universal.
They purposefully did not invite me because they hate me.
Yeah, so. That's kind of exactly what was going on with that when we were just trying to get away from me.
Right.
But it's actually a pretty cool little week. That was a year ago. And I was going to go in 2020 back to LA and probably would have stayed with you this time and had all sorts of adventures. And then the year 2020 happened.
Right.
With all that said, we got a bunch of topics to discuss that is some fun, actual, exciting things to talk about. One of the reasons I put the podcast on hold was because we just had too many weeks in a row for me that it was talking about movies getting delayed. So it turned into Sean Chandler and Griffin talk about movies getting delayed. And that's not why I started the podcast. That's not fun. And so it kind of just burned me out a little bit. Plus, I was homeschooling. There's just a lot of stuff happening. And so I put it on hold. And I don't know what the frequency will be this year. Probably every 2 weeks is what I'm thinking for right now. Unless more stuff happens. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm very fluid with these sorts of things. But we got the kickoff of the MCU last week. HBO Max has given us some first looks. We got some trailers. So there's some actually exciting things to talk about. The order of the discussion is down below in the description. There'll be time codes if you're on the rewatch of this, so you can skip ahead to your favorite topic of discussion. And if you're listening to the audio version of this, be sure to leave a review to help it rank a little bit better. And our first thing that we want to talk about today, Phase 4 of the MCU kicked off last week with WandaVision. And kicks off with a TV show. We got two episodes of it, and it was quite the kickoff to the MCU. Whether you loved it, hate it, wherever you are on it, you've got an opinion on it because this was a bold, interesting direction. In fact, some critics that Paul Bettany has actually quoted said this. Some gentleman said, this kickoff was pure brilliance. Some guy from the playlist called Griffin Schiller, I've seen some of the TV spots and they actually ran this quote that said, pure brilliance.
Yeah.
So you had quite the week too.
Yeah, that was really cool. You know, you never expect that stuff to happen, and then you know you wake up and everyone's like tagging you in like tweets from Paul Bettany and everything, and you're just like, oh, all right, cool. I guess I said something that resonated. That was really awesome. I mean, in full disclosure, I have been quoted for promotional material for marketing for films before, and I like that is just always super surreal to have happen. But I've never been quoted for something like this big, like
right. Marvel.
So that was like massive. So that was really cool.
I mean, the biggest thing this month, Marvel Phase 4. This whole channel exists because of the MCU. And in their kickoff promotion, they went, this Griffin Schiller fellow, well, we better make sure we include that one. And like literally TV spots, their whole promo, and Paul Bettany, Vision himself, of all the things, of all the quotes he can put on his Instagram, he picked yours.
That was the thing. I didn't see him post anyone else's nice quotes. It was only me. So I was just like,
that's pretty cool. I haven't been quoted yet. And some of you guys, maybe that you think you get used to those things when you're us of kind of having some of these. No, you don't. It's still like, I can't believe that just happened. And it didn't even happen to me. It happened to you. Wait, you're that
dude.
One. It happened to you. And it's still like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's no, that it is really cool. It's, and it's like encouraging. It's like, oh, okay, I don't suck at what I'm obviously doing something right here. So that was really cool. And that, yeah, and I got to chat with the director of the entire series. Super nice guy. And then outside of that, I'm just absolutely loving the show. So
on that point, we'll kick things off with our first subject of the day. Little discussion between me and you. Was WandaVision an awesome kickoff to Phase 4, or was it an awkward kickoff to Phase 4? So you, obviously, we just put up a quote where you said this was pure brilliance. Mm-hmm. So clearly, you absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
My take on it, I don't know where I stand on it. I'm certainly not throwing any shade at it, but it's not what I signed up for when I got invested in the MCU.
Yeah.
It's such a departure from sci-fi action, spy thrillers, where it's always action-based, and then this kicks off. And we're not going to go into any spoilers here, but, you know, if you want to know absolutely nothing, I don't know why you'd be watching this, but, I mean, it's legitimate sitcoms. Like, legitimate. The first, we've seen the first three episodes, they are sitcoms from each decade, from the 50s, first episode, second episode, 60s, third episode is the 70s, and they're fully embracing the style. And that's what the episodes are, with these little moments of intrigue hinting at the bigger picture. So for me, I think I'll go with the position, it's an awkward kickoff because there's no transition, because it's not, we're able to binge the whole season. So we kick off and we get these two weird episodes, or for us lucky critics, three episodes with no context.
Yeah.
To me, it's awkward to tick it off that way. Not throwing shade. This wasn't their original plan. It wasn't even their backup plan, really. But I think it's, with considering everything that's come before, it's a weird place to start.
Yeah, and I definitely see where you're coming from with that. And like a lot of the criticisms of what I've seen so far, I think are valid. I think what's probably the most valid statement is that it's really tough to judge a show like this off of the first three episodes. That's not even half of a season. Usually when critics get screeners to review, you know, television, they get half of the season. And then when the show catches up, they get the back half of the season and they're able to sort of piece together like full pieces on it. That did not happen with WandaVision. It doesn't happen with The Mandalorian either. The Mandalorian critics don't get screeners for. So, but that's a little bit different of an instance. But in terms of this show, I get where you're coming from. And I think it comes down to, are you on board with watching these really like otherworldly, just wacky sort of sitcom scenarios, knowing that there's going to be something at the end of the tunnel, that there's going to be this, you know, big climactic conclusion at the end of the tunnel. Are you okay with watching these scenarios and these actors just like completely dive into them in a new way and really like stretch their chops and their abilities as performers in like as these characters like we've never seen them before? Are you able to get into that? And if you are, you'll probably enjoy it a lot more than most people. Everyone I have talked to who is not, you know, a part of this online film discourse and community, like my parents, girlfriend's parents, her friends, my friends, all that stuff like that, they all like it, but they're really curious to see where it's going to go. But they're on board. And I think that's a good sign right now. They built up enough intrigue. There's enough there to like get people like, okay, so what's the outside world sort of like trying to come in? How did they get here and all that stuff? And I have no doubt that it'll all be answered by the end of the show. But based off of, you know, the season premiere that we got, I can understand why it would be a bit awkward for people. That being said, just in terms of like kicking off Phase 4, I actually like this better than kicking off with Black Widow and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, just because I think there is a clean enough break from what happened before. So we wrap everything up with like Spider-Man Far From Home, and like there's sort of the conclusion of the Infinity Saga. And I think that year that we had off was really nice padding, because it's just, it provides that space that we needed, the distance that we sort of needed from that epic conclusion. And with WandaVision, we're jumping into something different, something new. And it's, we still have the baggage of what's come before, especially with, you know, Wanda's trauma and Vision dying and all that stuff like that, which I'm sure the show will explore. But then we get to these episodes and it just feels like a fresh start. We're going in, it's a bit disorienting, but it's like really intriguing. And I like that.
Yeah, I try to think the difference between my take on it. Like my feeling on it was like, okay, this isn't really my thing. I'm so invested in this universe. I'm curious. I'm enjoying it enough. Of course I'm going to watch all of it because I love the MCU. I want to see where this is going. I do enjoy the mystery. This just isn't the thing I would immediately rush out to check out inherently because of what it is.
Sure.
So that's kind of my just default take on it. My wife likes 50s, 60s sitcoms quite a bit. In fact, over the last couple of months, she's been showing my kids episodes of Mr. Ed. Like, she's even trying to introduce my kids to old sitcoms. And so she's a little bit more kind of the target audience that would enjoy this sort of flavor of things. So I watched the first three episodes with her, and she was like, I guess that was enjoyable enough. I mean, it was kind of interesting. And so I was like, I mean, but you like this sort of thing more than I do. She's like, I guess. I mean, it's a nice novelty, but, you know, it's like a one-off. Hmm. And then she was also like, she's kind of the casual fan. She's, of course, seen all these movies and enjoys them, but she doesn't know it like me and you do. She's not in this world. And so she didn't remember that Vision had died. Like, she didn't remember. Of course, she's seen Infinity War multiple times. As soon as I said it, she was like, oh yeah, of course. But she didn't remember that. And so even on that point of like average Joe, a new Marvel show, and they start watching it with no transition. That's somewhat where I'm kind of approaching this one. It's more of a thought experiment for me of like, I don't know, is this the right way to do it? Will it be too alienating? Will too many people confused? Like, I had a bunch of people DMing me like, dude, I don't understand. Is this set in the 1950s? Like, mm-hmm. I thought this was set in the year, like, after Endgame, but why is it in the 50s? I was like, no, they're in a sitcom. They're not actually in the 50s.
It's an alternate reality.
It's not that at all. And they're like, I don't understand what's going on. I was like, well, you're supposed to be confused. You just have to wait. Yeah. But so that's where I just wonder if...
Just going off of that point, I was going to say that I think that that's why this almost would have been better had it dropped as an entire series and not a week to week sort of thing.
Yeah,
that was sort of my biggest thing. I mean, even after I finished the three episodes, I'm like, oh, okay. All right. I want to keep going, you know?
Right.
And I feel like this kind of show also like encourages rewatch. Like, how many people have already rewatched the first two episodes already and are just like dissecting it for theories or something like that. If you would drop this as an entire series, you know, I mean, I don't think the conversation would have gone away. It still would have been there in the zeitgeist. And I understand them wanting to do the week to week because like The Mandalorian, it keeps people talking. It keeps people guessing. It keeps it going until March, which is when that show's going to end. But for just in terms of like, you know, initial impressions, yeah, I think maybe people would have been more receptive to it had it dropped in its entirety on Disney Plus.
That's what I said in my initial reviews as well, of like, this is the nature of this show as the just inherently what it is, as with this kind of this intrigue you're watching. It's like weird and you just jump into the deep end and you're like, I want to know more. I want to understand what's happening, as well as it being the kickoff of phase four. This thing that has a built-in audience and so much demand. It doesn't feel like a week-to-week show to me.
Yeah, if it had just been a sitcom, like purely a sitcom, like just Wanda and Vision trying to domesticate sort of thing, then, sure, week to week, that's fine, because the consequences are very, you know, the stakes aren't big, there's no overarching story, it's just a novelty sort of thing. But that's not the story they're trying to tell.
Right. So we had a super chat coming from Shashank. He said, this is a show I enjoy more while I'm thinking about it, what's going on, rather than something I enjoy watching it based off the two episodes. And I like rewatching it. I think I enjoyed it the second time a lot more, because watching it the first time, I was like, I'm watching a sitcom, and then I discover some things. When you watch it a second time, you immediately realize every line of dialogue has two meanings. Yeah. Like, they show up and they're having a discussion in the first episode about trying to remember what's going on. That's a normal sitcom situation. And then you realize, no, that's tied to the bigger thing as well. So everything has a double meaning. And so I think it really does reward multiple viewings.
Yeah.
And here's something, as we've mentioned multiple times, we've watched three episodes. The third episode gives a pinch more of the bigger picture. It addresses things more directly, but it's another sitcom. It's another sitcom episode. Yeah. This one in the 70s, very kind of Brady Bunchy type stuff. And, but it's a sitcom. That's primarily what it is. Just a pinch more. Like, I've had people in my comments like, dude, you've only seen three episodes. You don't know. Like, it's not a sitcom. These are sitcom episodes. I don't even know why you're arguing with me. If the last three episodes turn into spectacle CGI, fair enough. But what they've shown us is a sitcom. What they're giving me to talk about is a sitcom. And it's a very interesting. It's a bold move. It's certainly has my interest. I can't wait till I see the next episode. And unfortunately, we have to wait even longer. But it's a very awkward way to kick things off because of the week to week in particular. It feels like we're like just watching a sitcom. Like I'm once again curious, what are people going to respond when they waited another week and they get another sitcom episode that just gives them this much more?
I think people respond more to next week's episode because it does bridge the gap between the wider outside world and the fantasy reality that Wanda has created, because I think episode four is actually going to deal more with stuff that's going in, you know, in the outside world. And you'll see when you see episode three, but I think people will respond to that more, especially because we now know that she's pregnant. And so obviously episode three, they're going to deal with her pregnancy and stuff like that, which is a big thing that people, you know, Wicket and Speed from, the Young Avengers being able to see that whole, you know, the birth of those characters and everything and what's going on with Wanda and Vision. I think people will respond to that a little bit more. You also probably will get some more confirmations as to like what's the outside organization and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
but it's a sitcom episode though. It addresses things this much more. It like progresses things, but it's the plot of it. It's a sitcom plot. another one.
Well, but here's the thing. So it's got a budget of $250 million, which is massive. Like, that's ridiculous. Especially when you compare it to like other shows,
I've heard that some speculation that article confused their numbers because the budget is $150 million, $25 million per episode. Oh, and it was originally a six episode run. And then they just multiplied out the 9 times 25 to get $225 million. So I've heard that might be exaggerated, but correct. $150 million budget. Somewhere this money's going to show up somewhere in this season. It is not in the first three episodes.
Well, and the other thing I think is like the I think that the end of the season, we're going to get like some climactic episodes that are probably going to be like hour long episodes. Like, we might have 2 hour long episodes. And so that'll definitely sort of like give the people their fix, the people who want the spectacle, the action and all that stuff. So.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know, like I'm invested. I'm so curious as to how this will keep it. Week one, people seem to be more into it than I was expecting. I thought there'd be a little bit more pushback. I thought I'd see a few more hate comments. There's a few here and there. The worst thing the MCU has done. Like, what is this? I saw some of that, but mostly people were pretty positive about what they did with the show. And, some people in the comments are saying, hey, don't spoil the show. Everything that we've mentioned is in the trailers. We haven't said nothing. The thing that's closest to that would be saying that she's pregnant. That's in the trailers. They show her pregnant in the trailers.
That was also in episode two.
They reveal that at the end of episode two. So, but if you haven't seen any of it, we're not saying anything that's even not in the trailers. So we're trying to be very careful on all of that. But so you would say, because we have to make this as polarizing as possible. It's an awesome kickoff. It's something different. They need to experiment. We don't need to play it safe. This shows us this is a bold new direction for the MCU.
Yeah, dude. I mean, absolutely. Like, this is so different from anything this cinematic universe has done so far. And that's what I want to see from Phase 4. I want to see big swings like this. Even if it doesn't work all the way, at least it was different and they tried. Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing that I can say. And for me, it's working right now. Like, I think it is legitimately really well written, really smart, incredibly well acted, and it authentically captures, like, the snapshots of these sitcom time periods that they're trying to emulate so well. And so like, it's just a case where the writing, the directing, the acting, the overall vision for the series is operating on such a high level for me. And it's doing something interesting. So, yeah, I mean, like, listen, that's what I want to see from Phase 4. I don't want to see safe bets. I don't want to see, like, you know, Iron Man 2s and stuff like that. I want these massive, massive swings. And so far I'm getting it. So
you don't feel like Iron Man peeing his pants was a bold enough move?
That was, well, it was
a choice.
It was a choice. Yeah. I certainly not what I expected going into that movie, but.
But that's, I think that's the thing that you just have to give them credit.
Oh, yeah.
This is as crazy bonkers. Like, they were criticized for playing it safe, and they are doing something different. Yeah. Now, all to that point, some people are trying to use that. Like, why is it, everyone's saying they played it too safe and they do an experiment. Now some people are saying this is too weird. Let's be fair. There's a big jump without a transition. So someone just because someone wants them to experiment doesn't mean they'll like every experiment or every experiment will pay off.
Right.
But for me, I certainly appreciate that they're doing something wild and different. I hope it pays off, and I'm sure it will. I mean, especially just knowing enough of the rumor mill, this thing's probably going to pay off in big ways. Daniel Skinner once again chimes in with the super chat. Thank you so much. Since I have very well known the House of M comic, I can point out references in the first two episodes that definitely point in the direction of House of M. And without even saying too much more about that, those little references and stuff continue in episode 3. There's a lot of things that when you rewatch it, in light of knowing where episodes end, in light of where the second episode ends, in light of where the third episode ends, and you rewatch the first episode, you pick up on a lot more Easter eggs. That's where, like for me, rewatching it the second time to write notes for my spoiler reviews, it was just Easter egg hunting. Just noticing every line of dialogue, and I even missed a bunch of stuff because it is jam-packed with references and more.
Yeah.
So... Alrighty, our second topic of the day. Over the last week, we've gotten some trailers as well as a bunch of first looks. First one on here that I want to talk about is we got a clip from the movie Cherry, and then we got a first trailer for the movie Cherry. If you don't know what the movie Cherry is, it stars Spider-Man himself, Tom Holland, and it is directed by the Russo brothers. So it's the Russo brothers follow-up to Avengers Endgame. Of all the things they could have done at the top of the world, they wanted to do Cherry, and they wanted to do it with Tom Holland himself. So this was one of my top 10 most anticipated movies of the year, just because I'm curious, what are the Russo brothers going to do next? And what is, I'm excited to see more of Tom Holland outside of the MCU. Of course, he's in 1,000 movies this year, so there'll be plenty of that happening. But so we got a clip and we got a trailer. I haven't watched the clip. I know you did not like the clip. There it is. That direction. I keep forgetting which way I need to point to point at you. You did not like the clip that they put out. You called it. What did you say?
I said it reminded me of a student film, and I still stand by that. That was an awful. Awful, 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 awful first look to put out for your movie. I was baffled that was what they, that was the first like piece of visual media we saw from them. I mean, it just, and really the trailer didn't do much else to win me over. It was a very, it was like, okay, we're trying to be a little try hard here, trying to be edgy, trying to prove that, oh, we're more than just the MCU guys. Instead of just like making a really good movie. I don't know, man. I was on board with this thing. I was really excited for it. I was like, yes, Tom Holland's got a real shot at an Oscar here. And then all of the first look stuff comes out, and I'm just like, this sucks. This is really, really bad. And yeah. So don't, if you haven't seen any sort of material from Cherry, don't make it that first clip, because it's really, really strange. Watch the trailer, but even still, I'm not on board.
Yeah, so I didn't watch the clip because I'd heard that, and I was like, okay, I probably shouldn't use that as my point of reference going into this if it's giving people a bad vibe. So I watched the trailer, and I didn't have your kind of negative reaction to it, but it feels like we've seen this movie.
Yeah.
It feels like kind of like the basic plot of it is soldier with PTSD starts going self-destructive course while falling in love. That feels like a lot of things that... it doesn't strike me as like, oh man, what an original new thing to do. It's like, okay, I'm not latching on to the thing that pops about this. That's
different. And they're telling it in the same way as like Goodfellas. And I'm like, okay, every other movie that is tackling this same exact thing is taking the Goodfellas formula since Goodfellas came out to tell that movie. What, like, why would you do something that is just so trite and uninspired for your big breakaway from the MCU? That to me is where I go, okay, you guys are trying to just be too edgy with it or try hard or something. That's, yeah.
So, yeah, I, if I was basing my excitement on the movie with no knowledge that the Russos were making it, just saw that trailer, it would be like, okay, another one of these. Yeah, I mean, the only thing that kind of catches the attention for me is the director and the star of the film.
Right.
And that's unfortunate. You normally want something that's a little bit catches you a little bit more, unfortunately. But fortunately, we've got more Tom Holland movies this year, so we'll get to see him show up in Uncharted later this year. But
Right. Well, and if we're to believe the rumors, he might be playing young Willy Wonka.
Right. That's what the funny thing about it. So he's done like only Spider-Man for 5 years. And then he shows up in a Netflix movie and he's in Cherry, he's in Uncharted, he's going to be another Spider-Man movie. They want him to be Willy Wonka. Like, man, now this guy's in everything and people are getting mad about it. But
everyone wants to cast Tom Holland.
Yeah. Interesting the way the universe plays out. Trying to look in the chat to see if there's any strong feedback in the chat on the movie. One person just saying, agree 100% with Griffin. Okay, well, that's simple enough. That works.
Yeah, for sure.
You can tell that he lost some weight. Yeah. Going from playing a superhero to playing a guy on a heroin. Probably got to drop some weight.
yeah. Like, here's the actual reactions did come out for the film, I think, like last week or something like that. And there was just some like really interesting feedback for it, mostly negative. But the one consistent thing was everyone praising Tom Holland's performance. So if nothing else, at least we have a really solid Tom Holland performance to look forward to. So I'm sure his career will be just fine after this. The Russos, I'm a little concerned about.
Yeah, that's what made it interesting to me is that they have a decade of dominating one franchise and rising up to the top of the world. But if you look at their filmography from before MCU, before they did Community, Dupree, Welcome to Collinwood, these are not movies that people remember. These are not like, it's like, oh yeah, that came out, didn't it? And so then I was curious of like, did they get really, really good after those movies while working on Community and going into the MCU? Or were they just really good at doing the show Community and really good at working with Kevin Feige?
Yeah, I mean, that's starting to look that way. Because if you look at the movies that they've produced, the only good one is Extraction. And that's because Sam Hargrave directed it.
And he's directing the sequel. He's signed on. He's confirmed that. If you guys don't know, Griffin, through his connections, we were able to interview him last year, and he couldn't confirm if he was doing it or not, but he said he wanted to, and he's now confirmed he is going to direct Extraction 2. So,
yeah.
Woo.
Yeah.
That's just a little side note in here, not even a official thing that we're talking about today, but we were big fans of that movie. Very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy's like my soulmate. I found out yesterday his birthday is even like 2 days before mine. I think he's a year younger than me, but it's like his birthday's right around mine, so we're like the same age, same month of birth, and we grew up watching the same movies, being inspired by the same things. He went off to be a stuntman. Like that's what I literally growing up thought, like, I would be so fun to be a stuntman. I wish it's like he did all the stuff I wished that I would have done. Like he has ended up living the life that it's like the alternative version of mine. So anyway, even as we're discussing, he was referencing all these small movies. I was like, yes. Except he actually followed through on that dream. And I guess in this other way, I get to talk about movies without breaking bones and stuff. So that's pretty cool too. Yeah. So continuing on, next thing I wanted to talk about is that last week, HBO Max put out a little mini trailer for basically promoting the fact that they're going to have a bunch of movies that premiere in theaters and on HBO Max the same day. And as part of that, we got glimpses of Godzilla vs. King Kong, Mortal Kombat, Space Jam 2. And so not trailers whatsoever, but we got glimpses, little snaps of footage. Basically, in my mind, they're kind of the equivalent of when you get the Entertainment Weekly first look at something and you get like five pictures from it. This is the motion version of that. So let's just kind of walk through which ones, some of these that dropped. First one, Godzilla vs. Kong. We got actually another big piece of information about this list last week. They moved it up 2 months. So this movie comes out in 2 months from now. Like, this is a movie that is right around the corner and we don't have a trailer yet. So I love monster movies. I actually like this franchise. I don't think they're quite as good as they could be, but I'm not a hater whatsoever. Even Godzilla, you know, people trash that one for not having enough. I don't have like really significant issues with it. And all of them, they get kind of dumb fun for me. And my wife loves these movies and she's a huge fan, Kyle Chandler. And so him showing up in the, King of the Monsters, her head explodes. It's her favorite movie that year. So she is super duper 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 pumped for this movie to come out. It's from the director of Your Next, a movie that I rave about all the time. I even talked about it in my video favorite movies of each letter of the alphabet. So I'm super excited for this one. I mean, I'm expecting a dumb Taco Bell movie, but of course I am. What else would it be? But we don't have a trailer yet and it comes out in 2 months. And that's just interesting. Like, I literally almost every day I kind of wake up and check Twitter just to see if the trailer's dropped. That's literally what I do. I'm checking just to see if the trailer's dropped.
Yeah, I'm going to be really curious to see if they drop a trailer before the Super Bowl, because I think they have a really good opportunity here to make the entire Super Bowl Godzilla versus King Kong centric. Just like drop a bunch of little spots, drop a trailer, make some, like, I don't know, do some cool like marketing affiliations with like the whoever's putting it on. I don't know if it's Fox, CBS or whoever. Just because it's a gladiator match of a movie. So play into that gladiator match of football that, we all know. And like, you know, nothing else is really big. Nothing else is really coming out. And so they have just this perfect opportunity, real person marketing there, say Godzilla versus Kong is going to be on HBO Max on this day. You do not want to miss it. It's like a pay-per-view event. Like, get creative with it. I think that's when we're going to start to see the marketing really, really ramp up.
What I think this is where HBO, Warner Brothers have such an advantage over everyone else that's still kind of trying to read the situation. And so is anyone else going to want to put a trailer out for their March movie, their April movie? Is, you know, if MCU is not sure what their plan is yet, if they definitely are going to stick to the theater, what are they going to put a trailer out? Who knows? But HBO Max, they are all in on this strategy. And so what else? I mean, they also have Mortal Kombat and like, Who is into a Mortal Kombat movie? People don't even know a Mortal Kombat movie is coming out.
Yeah.
Like all the 40-year-old bros, people my age that watch the Super Bowl, we're the Mortal Kombat age. Like, I remember when it came out and it was Street Fighter 2 versus the original Mortal Kombat. It was like two awesome side scrollers, but one of them you get to rip people's heads off. And we all had that friend that had the Sega Genesis because I had the Super Nintendo and therefore it was the edited version that didn't have any blood. But my buddy down the street had a Sega Genesis where you could still rip heads off. And so that's the generation that's like most tuned in throwing Super Bowl parties. So the HBO Max, you got Godzilla versus Kong and it's like the Titans are fighting. And then in Mortal Kombat, we're fighting for people's souls. And it's a brutal rate. Like, they can just destroy that weekend. I agree. Everyone's talking about the Super Bowl and everyone's talking about HBO Max.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Grant, like, we know that they're going to come to play, right? They're going to be a lot of speak their release for the year. But I think, doubling down on those two films especially would be really, really smart, just given their whole marketing strategy. And then obviously if you've got kids watching too, which, you know, sometimes the kids are there, maybe throwing like a Tom and Jerry one as well, also because it's like two cartoon characters like going at it with each other. So
they got a lot of mash battles in there.
Yeah, exactly. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for HBO Max to sort of do this whole thing. The one thing, but going back to not necessarily the Godzilla versus Kong thing, but like the show reel that they showed all together was Dune is still on there. Dune is still on there and they're still saying in theaters, on HBO Max, all this stuff. So it's like they haven't quite worked out what's going to happen with Dune just yet. And that's really interesting to me because I thought for sure that they would have like the next set of like HBO Max marketing would have taken that away and been like, no, this is going to go to theaters, but it's there.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to, pretty clearly, as we've discussed, Warner Brothers and HBO Max just rolled this one out without having a lot of conversations with people so it wouldn't leak, I guess, early. And it seems like they stepped on a lot of toes, but they're going forward with it. They're pressing on like, and I don't know if they could, there's any way they couldn't do that at this point in time because they've so promoted the fact that they're going to do this. They're making that their strategy. They're making it known like, all these blockbusters, sign up HBO Max, make it happen. Theaters, yeah. HBO Max for 30 days. That is the whole promotion. And so it's fun that they're all in on it. And as someone that reviews movies for a living, knowing that I can be confident that we're actually going to get this movie in 2 months and we're going to get Mortal Kombat in 2 months. And yeah. 4 or 5 months, we're going to get Space Jam.
Oh, shit. Space Jam. Yeah,
whoa. My mom listens to this and she'll be offended by your harsh, coarse language.
I'm so sorry. And how dare I say that in the same breath as Space Jam?
Yeah, right. Children, Bugs Bunny. Yeah.
Why was I talking about Tom and Jerry? Space Jam. Yeah, drop the trailer for Space Jam. It's a sports movie. Like,
right. We can keep going down the list of like, it's like we're predicting what's going to happen in 2 weeks or whenever the Super Bowl happens, like it seems like that's what they're doing. They're holding off and they're like teasing the pictures, this quick shots of it. But I mean, that's 6 weeks out from Godzilla vs. Kong. 6 weeks out. Like they can't wait any longer than that.
I'm sorry. I'm just still racking my brain around the fact that the first time that we're going to see Godzilla versus King Kong is going to be on a 4K television and not on a massive screen with a projector and just like opening night. Like, dude, you gotta like when they started this whole monster universe thing, this was you
the whole like, point. Biggest screen ever for the two biggest titans. Now watching, or think about the high schoolers that they watch it on their laptop or their phone.
Dude,
how many people, if you're watching this right now, how many people watch your streaming services on your phone in bed? And that's where you're going to be watching Godzilla vs. Kong.
Yeah, it's going to be like people falling asleep to The Office every night. Nah, hey, let's put on Godzilla vs. Kong before we go to bed. Just casually. Like, that's upsetting. And you know that who's the guy who's directing it? Adam Wingard, right? He's doing the
Godzilla. Yeah. Godzilla. Your next guy, yeah.
Yeah, you got to know he's so upset about it.
Yeah, that's be interesting to see how it plays out. So Space Jam, we didn't talk about that one. We pause on that one real quick. So I didn't grow up on Space Jam. I was in high school when it came out, or eighth grade. I don't remember if it was 95 or 96. So I wasn't going to go see a Bugs Bunny movie. I was just too old. And I've seen it. Of course, it's fun. But I'm literally 2 years too old to be the perfect age for it. So I don't really have nostalgia for it. I didn't grow up watching it. And I don't even remember when I first watched it, but it was kind of later on in life. So did you grow up on that one?
I didn't grow up on it, but it obviously was around as a kid. Like everyone had like Space Jam, like apparel and whatnot. I will say that I don't think it's as good of a movie as people like to think it is. The better version of it is Looney Tunes Back in Action with Brendan Fraser, which does not get enough credit whatsoever. That's a really, really good movie. And it plays on the whole Roger Rabbit thing like better than Space Jam. But if you just want that like quick nostalgia fix, like, yeah, you can go watch the Looney Tunes play basketball with Michael Jordan. Like that's literally all it's
novelty.
Exactly.
Bill Murray's a side character and Larry Bird shows up for 30 seconds. And like it's a movie so designed for novelty appeal. I mean, this isn't great cinema. It's just a wacky concept.
Yeah,
it's like a perfectly wacky concept.
And I think with the second one, like, I mean, I know there were some people talking about, oh, is that a 3D Bugs? They're not doing the 2D animation. I'm like, I expected them to go that route, but also I don't think there's enough clarity there for us to be able to discern that. Mm-hmm. But I think with Space Jam 2, dude, I just want them to go weird, really play into the just like Warner Brothers archive of IP. Like, you know, there were like the leaks coming out that's like, oh, Pennywise is going to be in there. And like a bunch of other just like random, you know, Warner Brothers characters from the ages. That's probably the smart move to go down. Not basketball, because we've already seen that. So you got to up the ante. It's like, what are you going to do different that's going to make this worth people's time?
Yeah, I think it's the sort of movie that just needs to know what it is.
Yeah.
Like, don't buy into the hype of people like, oh, it's a great classic. No. It's a gimmick. It's a gimmick. So if you lean into the gimmick, if you understand LeBron James is not an actor, so lean into the personality and all of the stardom, and it's all schlock value. It's all just lean into that.
Yeah,
that's I just think if it takes itself seriously or anything like that, you've already lost. Like,
yeah. Well, and here's the other thing. Here's the other upside this movie has. Michael Jordan was not an actor. LeBron James was actually one of the best parts of, was it Trainwrecked? Was that the movie he was in? I know John Cena was in it, but I think LeBron James was.
I haven't seen it.
He did some comedy movie, and I was like really impressed with like his ability as an actor. I mean, it wasn't like mind blowing, but I was like, oh, okay, this dude, you know, if he wanted to do a couple movies here and there after he's done playing basketball, he definitely has a future in it. Yeah. So there you go. Your lead's already a better actor than Michael Jordan. So I don't know. Just kind of roll with it.
So we got one more trailer we absolutely have to talk about. Someone in the comments has also been bringing it up repeatedly. Trailer for Willy's Wonderland.
Yes.
I didn't know what this was. Some people started messaging me, Sean, you have to watch the Willy's Wonderland trailer. You have to watch the Willy's Wonderland trailer. I was like, what are you talking about? And then I saw a picture of Nicolas Cage, and I thought, I need to watch the Willy's Wonderland trailer. And I watched it, and it was just as weird, bizarre, and Nicolas Cagey as I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
Where I guess he gets a flat tire, so he takes a part-time job cleaning up Willy's Wonderland, only to discover that the creatures come alive.
Yeah.
But he's not locked in there with them. They're locked in there with him, and you get no shortage of insane Nicolas Cage stuff. Even like it plays it most likely like straight faced. He's not talking, but it cuts just a couple times to him doing weird Nicolas Cage stuff. And it looks like we're going to get our first classic weird Nicolas Cage over the top performance. I'm pumped for it. My wife was freaked out by it. Oh, actually, pausing on this note, I just got a text from my wife. I guess she's watching this. She said she will go see Godzilla in the theaters. She will risk
her
health to see Godzilla vs. Kong in the theaters, which, given that every time I've been to the movies in the last 6 months, there have been 5 people in the theater, it is much safer than most of the other things that I've done, by taking my kids to school. So
going
to the grocery store. So, yeah. But back to Willy's Wonderland.
Right.
Wasn't on my radar at all. Seems like a perfectly weird Nicolas Cage movie. My type of weird Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah. The only reason I know about this is because of 3C Films. Dude's been covering this thing for like years. Because like, wasn't it supposed to be like the Five Nights at Freddy's movie or something like that? And then it sort of got like warped into something else or...
I'd heard something like that, but I don't know anything about Five Nights at Freddy's, so the point of reference doesn't mean anything to me.
Right.
And so then I thought that there was a connection, but I didn't want to say anything too ignorant, because I am wholly ignorant of the subject matter. But yeah, I think 3C is also my point of reference to be like have any awareness at all that this thing exists.
Yeah, right. For sure. Excuse me. Yeah, just based off of the trailer, I mean, like, yeah, it's wacky, it's weird. I mean, it's like Nicolas Cage killing a bunch of like killer Robotronics stuffed animal things. Like, it's basically taking like the Five Nights at Freddy's sort of like plot of like a fun house that tries to kill you, and like putting a spin on it. And then with Nicolas Cage, I guess, trying to like kill them and everything like that. I like the fact that he doesn't say anything in the trailer. Yeah. Like, I don't think he has a single line of dialogue. It's just screaming. And that's really funny. But I have to say, I was expecting it to be a little bit more like, I don't know, like crazy, like violent. Like it was crazy and it was violent, but I was expecting more, I guess. And I don't know, maybe that's on me. I'm sure it'll be entertaining to watch. Again, my expectations are very, very low for it. But I'm glad that people are excited for it. It looks like it could be fun. So,
yeah. Well, we shall see how this. Every year you get a couple weird Nicolas Cage movies, and he had about 4 or 5 years there where they were like just forgettable, lowbrow, like direct-to-video thrillers and stuff.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then the last few years started to kind of, they're still direct-to-video things, but they're a lot more interesting, like Mandy.
Yeah.
It's like, has a very rabid audience and very distinct directorial style, and you have him doing LSD and then battling a demon with a chainsaw. And then last year he did the Color Out of Space, that is from the director who hasn't directed anything since The Island of Dr. Moreau. And it's this trippy, weird body horror. And so he's getting better projects. So it's been kind of fun.
He's going like really headfirst into like horror and genre and genre, like weird, just like, I don't want to say B movies. They're almost like, and I don't want to say like grindhouse movies, but they're like that really like direct to video type horror film. And like, he's doing really well in them. And he's got one coming that's like premiering at Sundance this year. It's like Prisoners of Ghostland or something like that. And it's like a, I don't know, some like weird action movie. And I'm like, I'll take this over like, you know, the USS Indianapolis any day of the week.
Seeking vengeance.
Yeah.
So like the big film festival here in town that I've been to several times is Fantastic Fest. And it's like a genre film festival, a lot of kind of horror movies.
Yeah.
These movies are designed for Fantastic Fest.
Yeah.
And Color Out of Space premiered there. And it was, you know, it played there. And that's where I saw it, was actually in a theater 6 months before it came out. And I think he's finding a nice little spot to have his own revival of his career without it necessarily being in blockbusters. Not necessarily doing what he's doing before, but finding something new that fits his very weird, distinct brand that is him. Even, you know, his new show on hosting the Swear Words show on Netflix.
Yeah.
It just seems like, who would host that would make sense? Nicolas Cage. There you go.
Such
a weirdly perfect partnering.
Yeah, I'm glad that, I don't know, he's had a really interesting career. I mean, he was like doing prestige dramas back in the 90s and 80s and stuff like that. And now it's just like, the trajectory of it is really interesting. But I mean, the one thing that is sort of consistent is that he is legitimately a good actor. And I think people forget that sometimes.
Right. And that's like, he's always had a career that's kind of all over the place. Because if you follow, he's like in all kinds of comedies in the 80s, but then he also had dramas in there. And then it was Leaving Las Vegas?
Yeah.
He does this one and he wins an Oscar, and he follows it up with his 90s action trilogy. Like, he wins the Oscar. Most people at that point in time, they're like, you know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to try and get my second Oscar. I'm going to try and show the world how good I am. And what he does is he goes, you know what? I'm going to do three awesome 90s action movies. And to this day, all three of them, people talk about, like, they're fully remembered as standouts of the action genre. And in different ways, The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off are remembered in very different ways. And that was his follow-up to winning an Oscar.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, of all the directions he could take his career, like, it's very, like, such a strange career that he's had. And so now, the current generation that, you know, for the last 10 years, it's kind of, he hasn't been as in the mainstream. They know him for the memes and National Treasure. And so they know the over-the-top stuff, but they forget 25 years ago, he won Best Actor, and he was like a leading star of action movies.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just such an odd career.
Well, that action, his work in the action films, I have to imagine, led to like the National Treasure movies, mm-hmm. which is really interesting because of like out of all of his films, the National Treasure ones are like that. He is so tame in those movies. Yeah. Like you almost forget that he's like Nicolas Cage, who has just gone like that, like, you know, insane. Cause he just feels like a kind of normal guy. I mean, there was like mm-hmm. a few scenes here or there where he goes over the top, but it's like really funny. But yeah, the other question I have for you, when did Gone in 60 Seconds come out? Was that early 2000s?
2000.
Okay, all right. Because that was the other one that I remember growing up watching, and I was like, oh, that, you know, it wasn't like on the same level as like Face Off or The Rock or stuff like that, but that was like a really mm-hmm. solid like car movie.
And that was Angelina Jolie's transition to the A-list.
Yeah,
she did some stuff and got some indie fame, and she got some prestige fame for some of the smaller movies that she did, and Girl Interrupted and stuff like that. And then she did Gone in 60 Seconds with Nicolas Cage, who's on top yeah. of the world. And it's like, wait, oh yeah, yeah, John Voight's daughter. Yeah, she's really pretty and she can really act. She's a lot of fun. And then that's followed up by Lara Croft, and the rest is history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so, yeah, but yeah, Nicolas Cage, that guy is a legend.
He really is.
In yeah. multiple categories and in multiple ways, a legend.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
apparently a very weird guy, too, if you've ever seen pictures of him on the street.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
Oh, and we haven't even talked about it. He was supposed to play Superman in the late 90s.
Oh, like
he was like so much production on a Tim Burton Superman movie starring Nicolas Cage, a whole documentary done by John Schnepp that actually crowdfunded. That's the one Kickstarter I've actually thrown money to, is the documentary about that. That's
great Superman documentary. Lives. Yeah.
No, really yeah. good. And I guess if you watch the credits, you see my name in there. But that's Nicolas Cage. Nicolas Cage. So, all right. Got to move on to our final subject of the day, and then we'll take some Q&A. So we're getting close to the time where we start asking the question, what was the best picture of 2020? Who were the best actor, best actresses? And I am totally out of the loop on that one for the year 2020, mm-hmm. because press screenings were gone, because everything was kind of way the year played out. I don't even have any clue whatsoever what movies are even being considered, what performances are being considered. That's not my strong suit in any year. I'm just not that guy. So Griffin, I need you to help me know what movies I need to be on the lookout for, what things I missed, to kind of play a little bit of catch up. So just in general, what's the chatter about for best picture nominations, and I guess kind of best actor, best actress, some of those ones that people are talking about?
Right, for sure. So best actor is pretty easy because I think it's a two horse race right now, and it's not going to really change much throughout the course of the season. I think you've got Chadwick Boseman in Mulaney's Black Bottom, who is clearly the front runner for obviously a posthumous Oscar win, but also it's just another case where his performance is legitimately that good. And the movie itself, I wasn't as crazy about, because it suffers from the same issues that I think a lot of stage to screen adaptations suffer from, which is that they feel too much like a stage play and not enough like a movie. But that being said, the performances in it are great, and specifically Chadwick Boseman of giving us this incredible final performance, I think is going to be one to look out for best actor. It's going to be really, really, really hard, if not impossible, to top that. That being said, the person who I think actually does give the better performance and who I think might give him a run for his money is Anthony Hopkins for this film called The Father, which is a movie where he is basically suffering from dementia, going into Alzheimer's, and it's done through the lens of Hopkins' character. And so it's like really disorienting. He'll walk into a room and there'll be two people there who are supposed to be like his daughter and like his caretaker, but they've changed from who like his daughter and caretaker are. And so it's like, it's kind of framed like a horror story where it's like every room he's popping into is different from what's happened before. And you really get into, you know, the mind of someone who is, who's, you know, their mental state is deteriorating. And I'll go out there and say this. I think it might be Anthony Hopkins' best performance to date, which is saying something because he won the Oscar for Silence of the Lambs.
So. And he's Anthony Hopkins. And so yeah. Pretty much everything he does is amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the two big ones to look out for best actor. I think best supporting, obviously, you know, The Trial of the Chicago 7 has got a lot of, it's a great ensemble film where everyone is giving excellent performances and like going off of one another. The big one for that, I think, is Sacha Baron Cohen is the one that everyone seems to be pushing for that. And, you know, rightfully so, he gives a really good performance for that. But the one that I think is going to end up emerging as the front runner here is Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah. His portrayal of Fred Hampton has been getting stellar reviews across the board. I mean, that's basically as much as a you know, a lock as I think as what we're hearing right now. So Judas and the Black Messiah, I think, comes out in early February, and it's gonna really hit the Oscar race hard, I think, not only for best supporting actor, but, you know, best picture as well. So keep that one on your radar. Promising Young Woman, which is now available on VOD, I think is gonna be a big contender for best actress for Carey Mulligan. Film is divisive, and I'd be curious to see what like you think about it or some other people think about it. I really loved it, but I think what is unanimous is that Carey Mulligan is 100% in the awards conversation for that film. I'll be curious if she ends up taking the win, because I think Best Actress is still sort of up in the air a little bit. Because we have Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman, which is now available on Netflix. So if you're looking for a Netflix film that's an awards contender, maybe check that one out.
Gotten a hard no from the wife on that one. She loves Vanessa Kirby after the Mission Impossible, then Hobbs and Shaw. She's like, she's the best. And then this is her follow up to that. She's like, no way. Not watching that.
Yeah, it's a really tough movie to watch. It's like, I mean, did you ever watch Manchester by the Sea? Mm-mm. Yeah, it's sort of along those same lines where it's just like really rough life. But Vanessa Kirby gives her best performance ever. So she's excellent in that. You know, Five Bloods, which came out earlier this year, I think has a real shot at best picture. Spike Lee for director, some screenplay nominations, Delroy Lindo probably getting a best actor nomination, stuff like that. The big one, I think a lot of people are going to rally behind maybe for a best picture win would be Nomadland with Frances McDormand, which comes out on Hulu, I think in February, I don't remember the date exactly, but that one is basically about Frances McDormand's character living like this nomadic lifestyle and seeing the country and like seeing a group of people that are often ignored and whatnot. And I think it's just a really intimate and beautifully shot film that people, it's really resonating with people. So there's that. Regina King's One Night in Miami, which just came out. Which is also based off of a stage play, but of the same name, but more like a movie. Is that thematic flair to it? Regina King, I think we're looking at maybe a best director nomination. Chloe Zhao, who did Nomadland, which I just mentioned, I think we're looking at a best director nomination. And I wouldn't be surprised if Soul snuck in there. Snuck in there for best picture. I could see that happening.
I've seen that one.
So we could talk about
Soul.
I've
seen The Five Bloods.
Yeah, there you go. So out of the films you have seen, Sean, what do you think got the best shot at, maybe taking home the crown? Here?
I think Soul and The Five Bloods. So between those two, I would imagine The Five Bloods would have the better shot of it because animation has its own category. So there'd be a bias against giving it the win there. Yeah, but that's a logical calculation. I don't know otherwise, but since I'm so far out of the loop on some of these ones, that's why I wanted you to kind of give me the rundown so I can actually make some lists of the things to try and check out, play a little bit of catch up. And, especially
did you see, I was gonna say, did you see Mank, the Fincher?
I did. Yeah, I saw Mank.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That would be technical, not like for lighting, cinematography, maybe Fincher for directing, and all that stuff. But I don't, well, and Amanda Seyfried for best actress, but I can't see it like, you know, crossing over and hitting like, you know, a best picture or something like that. But, oh, and sorry, last one, I promise. Malcolm and Marie, which is coming out beginning of February with Zendaya and John David Washington, directed by Sam Levinson, who did Euphoria. That one has been getting rave reviews, and Zendaya is actually emerging as a front runner for Best Actress. She may actually win. So that's another one to keep your eye on for.
And if they moved back the eligibility date, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's like the end of February.
That's the important thing. So you said this movie comes out in 2 weeks. We're obviously in the year 2021. The reason that is because they moved back the eligibility because, well, 2020 was 2020, and made things complicated. So, okay, we had a question come in that I thought was a good topic to tackle. Question is asked, your thoughts on Chris Evans returning as Captain America? Well, basically, last week, a report came out that was a credible report that Chris Evans is in talks to return to the MCU in some capacity. So what's my initial take on that? If they are negotiating with him to have Chris Evans be in Doctor Strange 2 and some alternate reality, there's some fun potential there. If he shows up as Human Torch, that's brilliant. That's a ton of fun. If they do some wacky other alternate version using Chris Evans, I can be on board with that because it's the setup of multiverse creates a scenario where it makes sense to do something wacky, bring him back for something like that. If they're bringing him back to have old man Steve sit down with Bucky and have a chat with him and mentor him for a nice, fun little scene, the way Peggy showed up in, you know, what was it, Winter Soldier for just a little bit. That's cool. That's fun. That's a little nice little touch. If they're trying to bring him back to do a new story with him returning the stones, I just think that's a terrible idea. There's an interesting story there. I totally understand. There's an interesting story about Steve returning the stones, but it's looking backwards instead of forwards. And it communicates they aren't confident in their future. They have all these other characters, all these other stories that are interesting, also interesting. And instead of looking forward, they're going, man, I don't know if people are going to buy tickets for this. I don't know if they're going to watch this. We better bring Chris Evans back to tell a story about him returning stones that, while interesting, is inconsequential. Interesting, but inconsequential. So if it's for what if it's a little scene of him as old man Steve, if it's him in a multiverse as Human Torch, I think that's fun. If this is to do a miniseries with him, if this is to do Captain America 4, I am absolutely a no.
Yeah, you wrapped up his character
arc
so perfectly. I mean, arguably, I mean, like Iron Man's was really well done, and that one was a really emotional gut punch for sure. But if you had to ask me, like, which character out of the entire MCU had the best send off, it'd be Steve Rogers. You can't beat that ending shot of him and Peggy just getting that slow dance together. I mean, I'm getting chills just talking about it because it's one of the greatest moments out of the entire cinematic universe. And so if you're going to undo bring him back.
As a point of reference to my wife, who I use as the common man or the every person when it comes to the MCU, her big issue with the original Captain America, she was so mad that they never got that dance. Like, she was like, oh man, I like this movie. I really love their relationship, but he never was able to dance with her. Mm-hmm. And so I saw Endgame before her at the press screening. And so we went, you know, opening night, packed crowd. And I'm just sitting there like watching her like this as it goes to that final little sequence and just watching to see. And she's like, yeah, they did it. They got that dance. It was such a good send off. It closed it out. Yeah. It made sense. Totally on board with what they did. And the idea that they're like, all right, but what if we told another story?
No. And like even old man Steve, I don't know how much I would really want to see of him. Just because I don't know. Like, it just his arc ended. Like, I don't know. I saw something that was like, maybe he comes back in Black Panther 2 because they're going to try and bring back all the Avengers in Black Panther 2 for like some sort of send off for, I don't know, T'Challa or whatever. I saw like a tweet about that and I was like, okay, fine. Maybe I can get behind that because that's a really emotional moment. And it's like more than just the cinematic universe. But, I don't know, man. Like, I don't want to see like the him returning the stones. I don't even think that's like something that's even within the realm of possibility. Like that just seems like such a shallow idea for the MCU going forward. And ultimately, who cares? Like, who cares? So
it's like it's a fun short. Like like everyone goes, oh man, what is it like when he returns the stone to Red Skull? That feels like a mystery. That the intrigue of the mystery is a lot more interesting than the actual scene itself. Because what are they going to do? Like Red Skull have a philosophical debate about what Red Skull has learned now that he's become an immortal in a celestial realm? Like what are they actually going to talk about that feels like a satisfying conversation for Steve Rogers?
Yeah.
Like, do they think he's going to like start throwing the shield at him or like, no. So the intrigue of like, oh, he's going to have to return it to Red Skull. That's a fun observation.
Yeah.
I don't know that the scene itself would actually be fun.
No, I don't think that would be interesting at all. I mean, like him returning the stones, whatever. He's Captain America. He can sleuth around and he'll put them back and everything will be fine. Like it doesn't matter. There are some things that you don't need to see on screen. You can just leave it up to your imagination. And I think with Steve, it just like what more is there to do with this character? If you're going to bring him back, there has to be. And I can't tell you like a single reason why he should come back. Like mentoring Falcon and Winter Soldier, like it's not necessary. They've moved past the need for him to be a mentor.
Right.
With him giving the shield to Sam and being like, this is your thing now. You take over. You're in the position where it's your time. Be Captain America.
And the whole concept is that up to this point, they've been in his shadow. The whole point is they're moving on. So, like, I wouldn't, you know, if there was like a scene, like, and I mean like a scene. I don't mean like there's a whole subplot about how they're being trained by Steve. That's a terrible idea. He's in the universe still. So the concept that there could be a conversation, fair enough. Maybe I'm open to it. I don't hate that. I'm not for it either. I'm not promoting it. Yeah. The Human Torch one is the one that I think is the one that's like, that would be a lot of fun.
Like the multiverse multiverse. Deadpool 3 or
They're doing a multiverse. And so then he's playing Human Torch that he played 15 years ago. That's fun.
That is fun. Yeah.
And it's not super clever, but it's a little clever and it's a nice little touch for the fans.
Yeah.
But I him returning as Captain America, I think is a big, don't do that.
Well, here's the other thing is like, what if they do it? But there's like some sort of story that's set like in the past or something like that. Like after he's come out of the ice and after the Avengers thing like that, and it requires him to be there. I don't know. Do you think to me, I'm like just right around it. He doesn't need to be there. But I don't know. Maybe it would be necessary for him depending on the story. So
I mean if there's something that you know that they've introduced time travel, they're telling a story, you know, Black Widow's a prequel, so there's some stuff that could happen. Okay, if he does that, but what I just don't want is we can't let go of Captain America. That's what I think. They just, we can't let it go of Tony Stark. And it's where people are immediately like, oh, because Doolittle didn't do well, do you think he's going to return and play Iron Man again? Well, I sure hope not. That's not a good reason to bring the character back. Doolittle doing poorly has nothing to do with whether his character should continue. And if 5 years from now, they play out a couple stories and there's an interesting way to do some sort of event return, 5 years from now, sure, maybe that's interesting. Right, but right now, like, We're two episodes into phase four and it drops. Hey, Chris Evans is coming back. It feels like they just don't have confidence when you hear it like that. It just feels like, it just feels like that. And so I almost feel like they should have said like, hey guys, you know, this is, this is a like a cameo. He's not.
Yeah, they should have been open about. Well, I mean, to be fair, Chris Evans did tweet out and he was like, I know nothing about this.
Yeah.
And now granted, like, yeah, of course, he's going to say,
that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I actually genuinely think that he was being serious. And he's like, this is news to me. I don't know what you're talking about. So who knows? But
I think there's always a side to it of if the plan for the future feels like something that any one of us could come up with, that's probably not a good plan for the future.
No, like, that's yeah. I mean, the MCU has like thrived on like not being able to predict what's next. Yeah. Like Kevin Feige really just, you know, knowing the insides and out of this universe and the characters and just being able to tell a story that is way better than any fan fiction, you know?
Yeah. And I've heard a ton of these different theories of ways he could come back. And I don't think Kevin Feige would do that. Doesn't seem like Chris Evans wants to do that. He's game. Like he's not burning bridges, but there's just no reason to think that Kevin Feige would be looking to the past, not the future.
Yeah.
Especially when he's taking as bold of a risk of kicking off with a sitcom.
Yeah.
And then immediately to be like, but also I'm afraid of the future, so let's get Chris Evans back for Captain America 4.
Yeah.
Nah, I don't think so. That doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to close out the main section here. Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can head on over to the FilmSpeak channel. I've got a lot of WandaVision coverage over there, and I'm working on a video essay on WandaVision as well. So, if you want to keep the MCU talk going, you can head on over there, and we've got a whole bunch of great content. And then if you want to follow me specifically, you can follow me on Twitter, at Griff Schiller.
And if you're listening to the audio version of this, once again, be sure to leave a review and know that we stream these live. I announce it in advance so everybody can join in and take part in all of this. And as always, everyone, keep talking movies too much.